ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Kachit Tvam Nagamo Damyam Damyam Vasat Kritam Striyam Parajito Vata Bhavan Notamir Nasamai Hati Kvachit tvam nagamo gamyam Gamyam vasat kritam sriyam Parajito vata bhavan Notamer nashamai pati Kvachit tvam nagamo gamyam Gamyam vasat kritam striyam Parajito vata bhavan Notamer nashamai pati Kachit tvam nagamo gamyam Gamyam vasat kritam striyam Parajito vata bhavan Notamer nashamai pati kachit, whether,
tvam,
yourself, na, not, agama, did contact, agamyam, impeachable, gamyam, acceptable, va, either, asat kritam, improperly treated, striyam, a woman, parajita, defeated by, va, either, ata, after all, bhavan, your good self, na, nor, uttamaihi, by superior power, na, not, asamaihi, by equals, pati, on the road. Translation. Have you contacted a woman of impeachable character? Or have you not properly treated a deserving woman? Or have you been defeated on the way by some who was inferior or equal to you? Purport. It appears from this verse that during the time of the Pandavas, free contact between man and woman was allowed in certain conditions only. The higher caste men, namely the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, could accept a woman of the Vaishya or Shudra community, but a man from the lower caste could not contact a woman of the higher caste. Even a Kshatriya could not contact a woman of the Brahmin caste. The wife of a Brahmin is considered one of the seven mothers, namely one's own mother, the wife of a spiritual master teacher, the wife of a Brahmana, the wife of a king, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Such contact between man and woman was known as uttama and adhama. Contact of a Brahmin with a Kshatriya woman is uttama, but the contact of a Kshatriya with a Brahmin woman is adhama, and therefore condemned. A woman approaching a man for contact should never be refused, but at the same time the discretion, as above mentioned, may also be considered. Bhima was approached by Hirindi from a community lower than the Shudras, and Yayati refused to marry the daughter of Sukracharya because of Sukracharya's being a Brahmin. Vyasadeva Brahmin was called to beget Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Satyavati belonged to a family of fishermen, but Parasara, a great Brahmana, begotten her, Vyasadeva. So there are so many examples of contacts with women, but in all cases the contacts were not abominable, nor were the results of such contacts bad. Contact between men and women is natural, but that also must be carried out under regulative principles, so that social consecration may not be disturbed or unwanted worthless population be created for the unrest of the world. It is abominable for a Kshatriya to be defeated by one who is inferior in strength or equal in strength. If one is defeated at all, he should be defeated by some superior power. Arjuna was defeated by Bhishma Dev, and Lord Krishna saved him from the danger. This was not an insult for Arjuna, because Bhishma Dev was far superior to Arjuna in all ways, namely age, respect, and strength. But Karna was equal to Arjuna, and therefore Arjuna was in crisis when fighting with Karna. It was felt by Arjuna, and therefore Karna was killed, even by crooked means. Such are the engagements of the Kshatriyas. And Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired from his brother whether anything undesirable happened on the way home from Dwarka. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is then inquiring here about Arjuna's welfare, because he sees his luster is gone. So if the luster is gone, means something must be wrong. Something's happened. His health is bad. Something improper has been performed. Someone did something to him that made him upset. So when the subtle body is affected, then it is manifest. You can see it in the gross body. So here he goes through a list of different things, and we see it's all based on the proper performance of prescribed duties. is for the Kshatriyas, then this is very important, that the duties are followed properly and people are protected. Either one is giving protection or one is taking protection. We also see that this is the opening statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or this Poshanam, is that the Lord's protection. It's one of the main topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we see so many elements of protection. We see the residents of Dwarka, they are protected by the Supreme Lord, therefore they're so powerful, so confident. Everything is so auspicious because of the Lord's protection. And then here he's inquiring from Arjuna if he is able to perform his duties of protection properly. If so, then things should be nice. If not, something is wrong. So protection becomes a very prominent question within the Vedic culture. One is taking protection from the Supreme Lord, one is giving protection to others. So in that detail, then here is that the women are being protected. So, but in that, still, Prabhupada points out, discretion must be used. That there is nature, difference of nature between man and woman. And there's difference of nature within men and within women. So this must be matched properly. If it's not matched, then one gets unwanted population. So here it is mentioned that a man of superior origin can match with a woman of inferior origin, and that will not be so bad. It's called uttama or analoma. Analoma means with the grain. Means that like hair. You have hair, you push it one way, it goes smooth. You push it back, it goes against the grain. So higher man with a lower woman, that's with the grain. The opposite, that's against the grain. One would think, well, what's the problem? Problem is that for the natures to match, the woman has to bridge that gap between the man's nature and the woman's nature. So in bridging the gap, she has to drop in her standards, in her consciousness, in her activities. So that means then that is the inherent duty. Is she has to always be conscious of dropping her standards. Then that means you'll get children of inferior quality because the nature of the child would be to drop their standards. That's just the way it is. While the woman who's married a man of higher nature, she must always be conscious to maintain higher standards. So therefore the child will be endeavoring to attain higher standards. It's just inherent in the consciousness. So this is why analoma prataloma is there. Best, of course, is equal nature. Because equal nature, then one just acts very confidently in one's, prescribed duties. One doesn't have to always be making any mental adjustments. But if there is going to be a mental adjustment, then it should be there of improving one's standards. Right? Being conscious that I have to improve. So here he's pointing out, was a woman who was of worthy to be protected was not protected. Or someone who was not worthy to be protected, then you had contact with. Because either of these would make for a disturbance in his consciousness. He would feel he didn't perform his duties properly. Or he's thinking, here's, okay, were you insulted or insulted someone? But so were you insulted or someone by equal or lower? That on the road when you were going, someone challenged you, you were not able to defeat them or you were defeated by them. So did this cause some problem? Because he is trying to work out, is Krishna still present on the planet? But as we see by the questions, he didn't ask directly, because it's not something he wants to get. He just wants that Krishna is present. He's not going to ask a question that's going to get a no, because it's not the answer he wants to hear. So he will then inquire indirectly about if the devotees are happy and inspired, then something must be okay. Krishna must be there. now with Arjuna, then he's taking the first step. Is now he's also going to be okay if everything's going properly. So first he starts with his prescribed duties. He's performing his prescribed duties properly, then everything is okay. But as we see with time, then all avenues have been approached. So then all that will be left is, that is the inevitable question. But as long as he can postpone it, you know, if he can find another answer, he will endeavor for that. So we see here is how important or natural is the social structure, that for the Kshatriya, all these various duties will keep them inspired, and not following them, they'll lose their inspiration. In the same way as anyone within the Varnashram system, if they follow their duties, they will be inspired. Not following their duties, then they will not be inspired. So one has to ask one's question. Is one inspired? One is, then what is the cause? It is from the proper performance of duties. Then that inspiration will be long-standing. Or if one is not inspired, is that because of not performing one's prescribed duties? Then one has to check to see if that is something that should be adjusted. Because the idea is when the mind is peaceful, then it will be focused. When the mind is focused, there'll be full endeavor. And when there's full endeavor, then there'll be full result. Because no one likes something half done. If you're going to do it properly. That's the principle. That's the Vedic principle, and Prabhupada also says that we follow this. If you're going to do it, if you're going to cook, cook nicely. Don't half cook. If you're going to do anything, do it fully. It can be simply, but it must be fully done. Because the experience one gets from it must be complete. Otherwise, there'll be dissatisfaction. Right? Example is the Brahmin who is traveling in some far distant place, and he was very thirsty. And there was no alternative, but he went to one Muslim's house and asked for water. And the Muslim came with some water, but only half a glass. He didn't have any more water. So the Brahmin was lamenting that not only will I lose my caste by drinking this water, but I didn't even become satisfied drinking it. Right? So there must be fullness in the endeavor. Otherwise, there will be dissatisfaction. Right? That's the principle. So one should commit oneself to those things that one can fully do. Do those few things nicely. Don't try to do more. So Krishna says, do your duty fully. Don't mix it with others, this, that. Do your duty. Then you'll be satisfied. You'll be satisfied, others will be satisfied. Otherwise, if not, you won't be satisfied, others won't be satisfied. One note on this is that the Brahmin Kshatriya might marry a woman of Vaishya or Shudra, but that is not the first wife. First wife should always be that of equal nature. Because the son from the first wife, that is the one that's most important. Then after that, then there may be adjustments like that, but it's always the recommendation. Yes?
Like means the other vice versa.
He makes the point is that if there's more than one wife, if the first wife is of lower nature, then she is, the first wife is always the lead. It's not, they're not equal. The first one is the lead. So then that will make a problem because she will not be able to properly manage like that. So all these considerations were there. We see that when Arjuna married, Subhadra, then to make things work properly, even though she was of equal nature, she presented herself as junior. Then things worked nicely. So this is the principle, is that, yeah, there's a science, it must be followed. any questions on this?
Asat Kirtan. Sat means according to, is performing an activity according to Krishna's standards. So the national standard of Krishna is there mentioned. Mm-hmm. Everything should be done as it mentioned in the Shastra. That's the point is made there.
Oh, Vasat Kritama.
Asat Kritama means against.
Oh, Shastra. Improperly. Okay.
Yeah. Improper means against Shastra.
Okay.
Sat Kritama.
Here, a comment was made that in the verse Asat Kritama, Sat means proper, what is done according to Sat, according to Krishna's direction. Asat Kritam means not according to Krishna's direction. So he's pointing out here that that done according to Krishna's direction will create satisfaction. That not done according to Krishna's direction will not bring satisfaction. So that's a very nice point. Means Sukracharya. Did he change it?
Yes. Was he changing
his role as an acharya? Okay. Question is in his role as being the acharya, did Sukracharya change this rule of Anuloma and Pratuloma for his daughter to marry Yayati? There wasn't, so they didn't change any rule because Devayani was cursed by Kacha that she would not be able to marry a Brahmin. So the only alternative was a Kshatriya. And Devayani decided that if she's going to marry a Kshatriya, should be the best. Since he's the emperor, so then she'll marry him. Kacha was the son of Brihaspati. No, Brihaspati. So Brihaspati and Sukracharya were not on necessarily the best of terms, but they're Brahmins, they respect each other. Sukracharya had the Sanjeevani mantra, so he was able to bring the demons back to life after they were killed in the battles. This is a problem, because the demigods would die, the asuras would die, then be brought back to life and fight again. So the demigods decided we have to get this mantra. So then, after discussion, then a plan was made that Kacha would go to Sukracharya and become a student. And as a student, then he should learn this Sanjeevani mantra. So Kacha, the reason they chose Kacha, because he was so pure that he did not distinguish. Like that. He wouldn't say that Sukracharya is, you know, taking the side of the demons, so therefore he would deal very properly. So he would never be distrusted. So he approached Sukracharya and he became his student for 1,000 years. The demigods told him, be very careful to cultivate the relationship with Devayani. Because he'll live in the ashram, he'll be like a brother. So he should always take care of her as a brother. So he would do that, and so then they became very close. So after 500 years, the demons figured out why Kacha is there. Why? Otherwise, they're thinking, why would he come to Sukracharya? Why not those other demigods? Why is he not coming under their charge? So they figured out he's come for the Sanjeevani mantra. So then they killed him. And I think they cut him up, fed him to some jackals. Then he didn't come back on time. Devayani got upset, went to her father and said, you have to bring, I think the demons have killed him. So Sukracharya chanted the Sanjeevani mantra. He came back to life. But in coming back to life, he had to break out of the stomachs of all the jackals, so they all died. Then the demons were not very pleased with this arrangement, so the next time they killed them, ground them up into a paste and threw them into the ocean. So then again, Devayani insisted that Sukracharya bring him back to life. He did. No, excuse me. No, they killed him, burnt him into ash. No, yeah, made him into a paste. Yeah, so. Then brought him back to life. He came from the ocean. Then the third time they tried, this time then they ground him up into, I mean, they made him into ashes, and then they put him in Sukracharya's wine. So this is very early in the creation. So then, at that time, it was not against the rules to drink wine. So then Sukracharya was drinking his wine, and then Devayani came and said they've killed Kaccha again. So then Sukracharya chanted the mantra, but then Kaccha didn't appear. So he was thinking, this is strange, the mantra always works, why didn't he appear? Then he heard a voice from inside his stomach saying that, I'm here in your stomach, but if I come out, you'll die. So I won't come out. Sukracharya, you know, was making the point, well, he can't stay inside. So they worked it out that Sukracharya would teach him the Sanjeevani mantra, and then he would come out, and then he would chant the same, Kaccha would chant Sanjeevani mantra and bring Sukracharya back to life. So up to this point, Sukracharya was always avoiding the discussion of Sanjeevani. So now he saw that the demons themselves, in trying to get rid of Kaccha, attained the purpose of the demigods. We see this very much, it's a very normal diplomatic result, is that someone tries too hard to get what they want, and in doing so, they obtain the opposite. Very standard. Very standard. Like that. And you should see it again and again in history. It means what comes naturally within the rules, you endeavor for that. If you go beyond that, then it can create problems. So the demons attain the purpose of the demigod by just their over-absorption and trying to get him from getting the mantra. Sukracharya, it's up to him if he gives the mantra. But they are not trusting Sukracharya. So they are because of his affection for him. But it doesn't mean that he's politically foolish. Right? Emotionally they may be close, but it doesn't mean politically he's foolish. But the demons are not so refined. They don't appreciate these finer sentiments. So they made their own endeavor, and they lost. So then, after that, then, short time after that, then the 1,000 years was up, Kaccha was leaving to go back to the heavenly planets, took leave from Sukracharya, was taking leave from Devayani, and Devayani said, all these years I wanted, you know, to have you as my husband, but since you were a brahmacharya, I never said anything. So, now that you've graduated, you're a snataka, now you are qualified to marry, so you please marry me. Then Kaccha said, that wouldn't be possible because we're brothers and sisters. And she makes the point, well, brothers and sisters, yes, okay, you're Guru Bhai, we're in the ashram, he's your teacher, like that. So then we're brothers and sisters, but it's not uncommon that the disciple of the Guru will marry his daughter. But he says, no, it's beyond that. You have come from the body of your father. I have also come from the body of your father. I'm only alive because I've come from his body. So therefore, physically, we're brother and sister. I cannot marry you. So she wasn't buying this. So she got very upset. And as he was leaving, then she cursed him that he would not be able to use the Sanjeevani mantra. So he said, that's okay, because I don't need to use it. I'll teach it to others. They'll use it. Right? It's not important that I use this, you know, because he didn't have any ego. But he said, because you don't understand the proper dealings with a Brahmin and proper relationship. This is very subtle, that out of respect, they have such a good relationship as brother and sister. He took care of her. He did anything for her. You know, he would sing for her, he'd dance for her, he'd pick flowers for her, he'd do all kinds of nice services just to keep her happy. You know, I've done all this, that should be taken gratefully. We have a nice relationship with brother and sister. Why are you getting upset that we can't change it? So then he cursed her, you will never marry a son of a rishi. You will never marry a Brahmin son. So because of that, she couldn't. So then it's not against the rule. and that she marries a Yati. And since she is marrying a Kshatriya, then she marries a Rajarshi, who is as good as a Rishi, but is a Kshatriya. Like that. So then, and we see it was, she understood this, it was her arrangement. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So one always has to check in, that's why in the history is a story is told from a particular angle for a particular purpose. We see that basically, because all these stories are very special, the same stories are in all the Puranas. Every Purana tells actually the same stories. But depending upon the situation that the question arose that this story was told, the angle will be different. So in Bhagavatam we see that the story is more is about Yayati. And then the angle that is coming here, it's not so important. This, the important thing is that the proper performance of one's prescribed duties fully. And because Yayati hadn't really fully absorbed his senses, he was unable to remove the attachment for them. Then we see the duties of the son in helping him. So Pulu was the good son, and he helped. So that's more prominent in this feature. If the element question of the question had come up about this Anupratiloma, then that would have been described. Does that make sense? But since that wasn't the question, the story was given for a different purpose. Does that make sense? Because a story is so elaborate. Just like we've heard the story of Mandukya Muni being pierced on a wooden post by the king, because he was in the ashram and he was pierced on this post because they thought he was accomplice to the thieves. So he goes to Yamarai, says, "What's this all about?" So he says, "No, but you took a blade of grass and you pierced an ant." So he said, so then Mandukya Muni cursed him that he would fall as Vidura, and he also then made the rule that up to the age of 13 or 16, then the karma of the child goes to the parents. It doesn't stay with the child. It means whatever improper activity the parent does, then generally until they're 16, that reaction goes to the parents. Like that, it's not with the kid. After that, when they're 16, they're adults, it goes with them. Only way it would happen at 13 is if they are involved with girls and they themselves are therefore leading basically their own life. Then at 13 it goes to the child. But if the son is under the protection of the parents, of the father, then it's only at 16 he becomes adult, then the karma then what he performs is his. Otherwise then it's the parents. Right? So we know that story. And we've heard the story of, who is it? She stopped the sun from rising. You know? Not Gayatri. Well, whatever, one of the great satis. Then she stopped the sun from rising. Right? Because her husband was cursed to die. And so when the sun rose, so she said, fine, the sun won't rise. And by the power of her chastity, the sun god couldn't step into his chariot. When he would come to step, he'd get frozen. So then, if the sun doesn't rise, then the universe, you know, has a problem. And not the whole universe will die. So the demigods didn't know what to do. They go to Brahma, and then Brahma says, well, it's this lady. So then Brahma and all the demigods came there. And then Brahma said, you know, the sun's not rising. She says, yes. So, and it doesn't rise, the universe will die. And she said, you know, you're Brahma, the universe is your problem. My husband is my problem. So I'll take care of my husband, you take care of the universe. So then Brahma worked out a thing, okay, the guy's old, he's a leper, you have to carry him around. Let him die, I'll bring him back to life with a new youthful body. So for the benefit of the husband, the wife said, okay. Not for herself. She was happy, but he's a leper, whatever. He's her husband. So we know that story. And we've also heard the story of the prostitute where there was a leper who, he had a very chaste wife, but he had always heard about this super excellent prostitute and he wanted to visit her. So then the wife made the arrangements that he could visit this prostitute. But to do that, she had to work for the prostitute. And then the prostitute would agree to see her husband. So then this prostitute then, once the leper came, then she went to take her bath and make nice arrangements. She cooked nicely, she brought the meal. Every preparation was in an iron pot and in a gold pot. Same preparation, so there's two of everything. One in the gold pot, one in the iron pot. So then, the leper then eating, then he noticed that there was two of everything, and one was in gold, one was in iron. So he says, what's the need? Why do you have to put it in two? He says, well, that's the way you like it. He says, that's the way I like it. He says, yes. He says, she said, does it taste any different? He said, no. But you like it like this. He says, how do I like it like this? He says, you're associating with your wife. And you see her like the iron pot. You see me like the gold pot. But the taste of a woman is the same. It's no different. It doesn't matter. Right? So we've heard all these three stories, but they're the same story. One part is told in one Purana, one's told in another Purana, one's told in another. So that's how you get the variety, that it seems that there's all this difference. At the same time as the one was bringing out this point of that association with woman, that there's no difference. So don't get worried that someone else's wife is more beautiful or this. Don't worry, it's the same. The experience is the same. The dog has the same experience as a human has, as a bird. It doesn't matter. So that's the same. That's the point of the one. The other one is that chastity of the woman. Just the power of, she's chaste and this is the power they have. And the third one is the justice of proper action, the karma. You perform an activity, you get your result. But it's the same story. It's the same wife or the same leper who went to the prostitute. While she was coming back from the prostitute, carrying him in the morning, because the sores in his body smelled, when she passed by where Mandukya Muni was pierced on the post, he thought he was meditating in his ashram. And when he smelled the bad smell, he thought the demons had come and were throwing around pus, stool, and urine, as they regularly do in the ashram. So he cursed them that they will die before sunrise. He didn't know that he was on a stake in the kingdom, and this was a leper going by. So he cursed like that. So it's all the same story. Does that make sense? So that's why if it's not in the one place, it'll be somewhere else. Because the scriptures set the standard, scriptures will never go against the scriptures. Krishna doesn't go against the scriptures. Like that. So that's the principle. Does that make some sense? What time is it? 9. Okay, last question. Yes? Since nothing moves without, not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord, So then why do we have to worry about these devotional performances like going to Vrindavan and that? If Krishna wills it, it'll happen. If he doesn't will it, it won't happen. Why do we have to worry about what woman we marry? Because if it's the Lord will, it'll happen. If it's not, it won't happen. All based on a previous karma. Yeah? Okay. One, I just would have a simple question to you. What do you do as an occupation? What do you do for a living? How do you make your money? You take it easy always. Okay. So it's God's will. Now, you make no choices. You go to a restaurant and you just tell the waiter, whatever's God's will, you bring me. Or do you say, I'll take this and this? Yes, that comes from your heart. So now the point comes is, what you like comes from your heart. And what you don't want, what you don't like, oh, you leave up to God. Or anything that restricts you, then that's God. So this is not taking responsibility. This is cheating. Because it's all according to God's will. But God means it's God sanctions it. It doesn't mean it's His preference. Not a blade of grass moves without the Lord's sanction means the blade of grass wants to move that way. According to karma, it's allowed to, so Krishna allows it. It's not that it's His preference. So when you do nonsense and don't follow scriptures, it's not that that's Krishna's preference and therefore it's okay. Is you're doing that because of your desire and because you have some previous karma to get that result, you're allowed to do it. But it's not that God is pleased with it. So always remember the responsibility is with you and don't try to project it onto God. That is His fault. Yeah? No, I understand. Okay. Yeah, no. Yes. Very good. Okay. So we'll end here. If there's anyone who wants to continue with any questions, we'll continue afterwards. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jaya Jaya Gopala Vena. Say again? Should activities you can't perform perfectly be given up? Perfection depends how you define perfection. Right? If it's partly done, okay. Yeah, okay. So the doubt comes is that point was made, if it's not done fully, don't do it. That means it's full endeavor in that. Acoustics are bad, yeah. Perfection, it depends what we call perfection. If perfection is in perfect material result, then we'll always have a problem. Because material world, generally you never get a perfect result, and if you do, it's very rare and probably won't get it for very long. Perfection is actually in more in the endeavor. That's where it's looked at. The balance between the proper interaction between the elements of the activity. Does that make sense? It's the mechanics of the activity. Let's say you're cooking. You have to have a fire. You need a spoon. You need a pot. You need some water. You need spices. You need ghee. You need, you know, various things. Those are all the elements of the cooking. So that you properly understand how they'll relate. Maybe you have ideal ingredients, maybe you don't. Maybe you have all ingredients, maybe you don't. But whatever ingredients you have, the relationship is as good as you can get it. Does that make sense? So that is there. Your purpose in cooking, that is as proper as possible. And therefore then with what you have, you do the best job you can. Maybe you're not expert, but you do your best. Right? And then that result, generally you'll find, is good. And if there's potential, it will develop. Right? Maybe one's not a great cook, but with practice and like that, it will become good. Right? But if one can't, you know, every time you put the pot on with some water in it, you burn the water, you know, then maybe you should look to another activity like that. Then it's obvious that that's not what you should do, because it just won't work. But otherwise, if that sincerity is there, even an imperfect activity is seen as perfect and something perfect is not, because if the mood is more important than the perfection of result. We always endeavor for perfection of result, because to that degree that we are attached to materialistic, we endeavor for a material result. That's why you see is that those who are the most expert are the most materially absorbed. But at the same time, then when we take up Krishna consciousness, the tendency is, because I'm not doing it for myself, it doesn't matter. The result doesn't matter, so therefore it doesn't matter how good it is at all. Right? But as a devotee, then we want the result for Krishna. Therefore we'll work just as hard to get as good a result. Does that make sense? So that's perfection. Okay. Maybe we're satisfied with the result, but our authorities are not. So that means then we have the potential, we should work harder. We should see what was wrong and figure out what to do. You know, don't put the fire on so hot, then the water won't burn. You know, things like that. So we just try to perfect, because otherwise it's not necessarily that the first attempt is going to be perfection. It's always understood that many endeavors are there. So that's the maverick attitude has its advantages and disadvantages. The advantages is you'll try something you wouldn't normally try. So this principle that Prabhupada said of shooting the rhinoceros, one will try it. Because basically you'll see mostly, most cultures of the world won't try it. Because they understand that perfection and activity takes time, takes training, you have to move yourself up through the ranks. And if you perceive that I don't have the potential, you won't even try. So unless someone else is there very much encouraging, setting the good example, then over a long period you'll get them to take it up. And then it will go. But the maverick society, even if you have nothing to do with it, you'll try it. So it's an advantage there. The disadvantage is there's an equivalent ego to go with it. The non-maverick society, generally the ego is more gentle. It's there, but it's more gentle. The maverick, it's more in your face. So the same that they'll try it, if they get a good result, then they really think that they cast me out. And if they don't get the good result, they're ready to jump off the, you know, broken bridge. So it has this disadvantage. Socially, as far as making that risk for Krishna, it's a great advantage. But as far as social interaction, it's a disaster. So one has to find that balance. That one is making that risk for Krishna, and good or bad result, that's up to Krishna, and one is able to be humble, then it's very powerful. Because the other one also, out of false ego, won't do. Because they won't get the good results, so therefore they don't want to look bad, so they won't try it. The other one, they don't care if they get a bad result, because what does it matter? You know, they got a smart comment to say back to anybody who says something to them anyway. So it's, you know, does that make some sense? So the point is to one's degree, the body, mind, and word should be get absorbed. That's perfection. But it's not that perfection can't get better. There's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So maybe in the beginning you didn't know, therefore your attitude was right, your technique was not right, but because that attitude was there, it was perfect. But as it's pointed out that the technique could be better, you know, then, you know, like it's pointed out, put more than 3 drops of water in the pot, you won't burn the water. Then, knowing that, you can't say, well, I did it last time and it burnt and it was perfect, so why I can't do it again? That time, then the one's insincere. Because one has learned what is proper. Then one should do it properly. Does that make sense? Then one moves slowly. That's why you can't go, it works both ways. You can't get away with what you did when you were younger. As you mature, you know, it's a very common thing. Kids always do this. What they can get away with at 3, they're still trying to get away with 8 or even 12. They're still trying. You know, it worked, so it worked great, so now they're still trying. So that they shouldn't do. And the other way is that one shouldn't say, well, as a new bhakta, they were like this. Yeah, but now they're mature, they're a GBC, they've been around 30 years. No, but as a new bhakta, he did this. You hear that all the time. What someone did 20 years ago, it's still a fresh issue in somebody's mind who has an email. So therefore, it's somehow or another considered bona fide by those who don't know what is social standards. What is political standards? What is devotional standards? People change. People move on. But in the name of progress, they're the most regressive people on the planet. And if we were in the quote-unquote real world, they would have been sidelined years ago. But since we're working in our own reality, and these people can be very prominent in society and, you know, lead it down the path of chaos. But these two things have to be learned from this point. Is the past, one learns from it, but one cannot establish something on it if the present shows different. If 20 years ago the person was like this and today they are like that, then you can say, hey, there's a pattern here. We have to be careful. But if 20 years ago they were like that, and for the last 10 years there hasn't been any problem, then to bring that up, that's actually, according to the Dharma Shastra, according to Mano, is a sin. And you can go to hell for it. So to bring up someone's past when they've corrected themselves, that's a sin. So it goes both ways. The thing is one should make that endeavor, but one shouldn't oneself live on the past, nor should others live on the past. You know, one should live in the present. That's progressive. Present's progressive. You know where you're going, but you're in the present. You learn from the past, but you're in the present. That's progressive. To live in the past or the future, that's not beneficial. Is that okay? Is that yes? Something else?
The way he mentioned was all over the world.
Why all of a sudden our arranged marriage is not working? Few things, or two things, one thing, lack of training. Those who are arranging the marriages don't know what they're doing. Those who are getting married don't know what they're doing. So then there's this idea that if I do it myself, it'll work. But as we see in those cultures where they do it themselves, I think the success rate is 30%. Between 30 and 25%. While we see in India in the arranged, then it would be up in high 90s. Like that. But the point was, is people knew what they were doing. So the point is that if you know what you're doing, it'll work. You don't know what you're doing, it won't work. Because it's like this. You arrange the marriage means you have people who know the parties involved. There's someone who knows the boy, someone who knows the girl, someone who knows the standards of what means household life. And so therefore they can see, well, these two people, they have the same value system, they have the same methodology to attain that value system. They have, you know, in other words, there's a common platform to function from. Then it will work. But if there's some other reason, then it won't work. That's not your purpose, but to find what works. And what works for the purpose of religious principles. So then it will function. You know what I'm saying? It will function. Because if you're going to go on your own, then you'll probably find it very difficult to find out from the other party what is their strengths and weaknesses. Not only that, how do you see them in their actual life? You meet on the weekend. You go out to a movie. You go to a restaurant. You sit in the park. That is not the reality of marriage. The reality of marriage is when they're back in their father's home and he's paying the bills and having to interact with them and how they keep their room, how they interact with their parents, how they dress, what they value. That's the reality. That you don't see on the park bench. You don't see it. Even if you visit, you say, well, hey, I'll visit their house. Okay, you visit your house. The boy's going to go into the girl's bathroom. She's going to go into her closet. Then? Girl might do that to the boy, but it's not going to go the other way around. So how do you know how the person lives? What actually is their value system? Because at the moment, if something is presented nicely and there's a commonality of emotional experience, it sounds great. But then when you go back to your natural situation, perception may change. Two people sitting on a bench talking about something, it sounds ideal, sounds great, but then when you get back with your friends, hey, we're going to do this, what, you're going to do that, that's crazy, then, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. So that's why doing it yourself is the least ideal. Real hit and miss. If you're really trained what to look for, you're looking for qualities, you stand some chance. But if you simply look at the body, you got a problem. Really got a problem. You know? Because it's the qualities that last. Companionship is based on qualities, not on the body. And companionship is the common element in marriage. That's the final, mantra that concludes the actual core of the marriage is be my companion for life. Right? Fixed in the seven vows. Because the end of the seven steps, that's the marriage proper. That's the point. Nothing else. If one is a companion, everything else will work out. What you're going to eat, how you're going to dress, where you're going to live, how you're having your money, everything else you can work out with your companions. If you're not companions, it will not work out. Right? And the magnetism, male-female magnetism of sensuality is very short-lived. Right? One has to remember, even in the most ideal situations, the fabulous book and the great movie, one has to remember the movie is only 2 hours long. So it's easy to make it last. 2 hours. That's it. And most of the 2 hours is not spent in the same bed. Right? And the book also. How long does it take you to read the novel? It's a few hours also. And how much of that is? So therefore, the reality is that's very short-lived. So if one bases it on that, which is the modern, a very lot to do with the modern, it's a big problem. Based on qualities, less problem. Because if you have qualities, you automatically are attractive. Qualities are attractive. Right? Physicalness, if you smile, you'll look your best. But you're only going to smile if you're happy. The other person's not going to make you happy, you don't smile. So even though you may be good looking, your partner's not going to see it. Like that. That's the whole point. One has to remember, the model looks good on the front of the magazine after 3 hours of Photoshop. But behind the scene, to the guy who takes the pictures, to the person who does the makeup, to the person who arranges the contracts, to the person who does the outfits, they think she's a witch. That's the reality. Does that make some sense? That's why one always should take help in marriage. Prabhupada says, do the charts, if that's good, then you look at it. Like that. Problem is the boy and the girl just by nature will become attached, even if it's not a good arrangement. How many times have you heard of, they go together, they're going, they're in this quote-unquote association. We've coined this phrase in our society. They interact. They get to like each other. Hey, this looks like it's going to work. Then they do the charts. The charts are terrible. What are they supposed to do? I've seen it again, 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 again. Point is if it looks like it's done, do the charts first. But I want to check it further. If it's not worth checking in the chart, it's not worth checking. And then they either go through with it. Maybe it works, maybe it's not. It can work if both parties are very, very humble and tolerant and respectful. Then the chart doesn't matter. But nowadays, just point them out to me. I'd be really happy to know where are these couples that have these qualities. Just point them out. These young people are getting... Point them out. I'd like to see them. I've heard about them in Bhagavatam, like that. I'd like to see some. I'd really like to see some. Right? They can't tolerate that in their house they're supposed to put their stuff away. Right? How are they going to put away a whole house full of stuff? Right? They can't tolerate, the mother going say, hey, can you go down to the shop and get me a few potatoes? They don't have time. How are they going to go and get enough to feed a whole family? And besides that, that's the food. Then there's the clothes. Then there's the other things. So you're going to take those two kids, the girl who doesn't want to do zip in the house and the boy who doesn't want to do anything, and they're going to be the ideal couple. Right? Because he's got the, peroxide gel hairdo, and she's got, the Gap, tank top on. So, bah, yeah, they got to be great. You know, so that's the problem. Is untrained people don't know what they're doing, and then they somehow that are, you know, and the girls are saying, yeah, where are the guys on the white horses? And the guys are going, yeah, where are the princesses? So like that, it goes both ways. I've seen a marriage 30% compatibility on the chart. It works. They fight like cats and dogs. It's not that they don't fight, but they're so tolerant, they just let everything go, everything. And they know the charts are bad. But I think they found that out afterwards. You know, whatever, whatever's the reason, but they're so tolerant. Now they don't agree on anything. There's nothing that they agree on, other than Krishna consciousness, basically. You know, but it works because of that. Humility, tolerance, respect. They're not looking for that respect. But because their inherent nature is so different, they automatically do something that annoys the other person. So why live like that? Even if you say, we could make it work, even why live like that? Why not find something that's better? Right? Why not find something better? So it's better to take help. Yeah? Yes? Should you get out before they get married? Or you were saying look farther down the line?
Yeah.
No, which is it? Or just at any point?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is, because I was giving an example before marriage. But you were also saying then after.
Saying most people don't take advantage of the circumstances.
Circumstances. Okay. Should they? Okay, should they stick with it? Then the thing to do is bring it to a level of maturity. Because on the means the intellectual platform has to play a very strong part. Because what happens is that if it's not working, generally emotionally it's where the problem is, because that's where the mind, you get disturbed there. Now, it may be a value system of the intelligence, of emotion, or of sensuality. Maybe any of those, but it will be felt in the mind, because it's a value system of the mind. So, anything that you want to readjust in the mind, you have to do so through intelligence, because intelligence is higher than the mind. If you don't do it through intelligence, then it will just stay in the realm of the mind, and it will be a problem. So then the thing to do is actually analyze what are the problems and what is it. Means a problem is there because it means the problem is the negative of the positive. Right? In other words, it's not clear to each party why they're married. Right? In other words, you have to take it and break it down and analyze it. Then one, it takes it out of the emotional realm. So that means it takes it out of the realm of good emotion, but it takes it out of the realm of bad emotions. The bad emotion's the problem. Does that make sense? So first get rid of the bad emotion, then we'll talk about good. So one shouldn't be afraid of it because it's a non-emotional approach. Right? The emotions are considered, but they will be analyzed from intelligence. So the first thing to do is both parties to sit down. Probably the easiest is to write. They can speak, that's okay, but probably they are, you know, you're saying they already have kids and they've been around a while. There's a lot of things that they know about each other, but there's something they don't know, otherwise why is there a problem? Right? Or they know that they don't care. So write down. Each party should write down Why marriage? What was it, the concept, what was the ideal that, you know, that there, what were they thinking they would gain from marriage? What was it, what did they see as the ideal thing? What did they think was going to happen? And they shouldn't out of shyness not say. They should fully just say, because here we're looking at a problem. If they don't figure it out, it's gone. And you may screw your life up, but worse is to screw up the kid's life. That's the thing, is that the Vedic was meant to protect everybody's life, and especially the kids. The modern thing is you only worry about yourself and trying to fit the kids in around them. So it's got to be the other way around. Once there's kids, that's got to be major. So you have to say, why did you go into the marriage? That would be the first point. You know, everything about it, threadbare, anything. Any little, even the most minuscule detail, write it down, because that's what makes it fall apart. It's not the major thing. You know, I wanted to live with someone and perform my Krishna conscious duties to go back to Godhead. Probably that's basically there. It's the little thing. You know, it's the little thing of someone to be with, or to render service, or to interact with, or, you know, whatever was the, you know, the reason. It's the little things. Then, one should then write that the second thing should be, what is it that you saw in the other party that you thought that they would be the one to give you this ideal? That would be the second thing, and be very clear on that. Third thing would be, then, what is it that actually is going on that the person does that disturbs you, that it doesn't reach this ideal and you didn't think was them? You thought that they had another quality. And be very clear on that. But in doing that, it shouldn't just be, well, he drops his socks all over the house. Okay, that's an annoyance, but why should it be an annoyance? It has to go back to your first point of you wanted something very complete. That means your first definition, it doesn't include the socks. It's not a complete definition. It means you wanted a tidy household with someone who cooperated, had the same values as you. They don't have the same values. Therefore, there's a problem. It's not the socks. The socks are a symptom of something deeper. Right? It's a symptom of a quality. The socks, it doesn't matter. The little kid drops the socks, the mother finds it cute and happily picks them up. So it's not the socks. It's an attitude of the socks. You drop them and you're either so unaware, but not meaning otherwise. So then the value is, I wanted somebody who is more conscious. That's the problem. Or if they are conscious of dropping the socks, but they figure that's the wife's business to pick it up. My mother picked them up, why my wife won't pick them up? Then that's insensitivity. So then the wife is looking for someone who's more sensitive. Right? So this third stage, the first two will be difficult to do, but it's just you. You know, it doesn't really take intellectually. It just takes, you know, a little searching and being conscious. The third one, then you have to use your intelligence, because you have to see why it is that the detail of what bothers you is actually a botheration based on your first thing of what you said, why I'm going into marriage. And what are the qualities you expected to see in them? You thought they were sensitive, because they were sensitive in certain areas, but in some areas they're not. Otherwise, if sensitivity was important, you would have had to have seen it somewhere. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gone into it. But you thought it was complete, because you don't really know the person. So therefore, maybe they're sensitive 80% of the time, if it's the 20% that drives them nuts. So they have the potential to be sensitive, so they have the potential to extend that sensitivity into the areas where they're insensitive. Does that make sense? But unless you can point it out, if you just say, you drop your socks all over, you're driving nuts, then that's not good enough. They can, okay, from that try to be and work it out themselves, this is to the point, it's beyond that, because there isn't that communication isn't that strong. If it was, it would have been worked out a long time ago. So with that, then you have to see that the three are consistent. What your ideal of marriage, what was that in the person that you married you thought would get you that ideal, and what is going wrong that the ideal is not attained. So it takes a little work. You know what I'm saying? In doing that, the individual, each party will actually know what they're looking for in marriage. It will be much more clear. They themselves probably don't know what they're looking for in the marriage. They have a feeling, but the feeling's not good enough. They should be in knowledge of what they're doing. Devotionals, animals feel, humans think. Then their feeling matches that thinking. That's great. But if the thinking and the feeling are in opposition, then you'll have a disturbed person, a neurotic person. So that makes it clear. Two, it makes it very clear to the other party what it is they have to work on. And then the fourth thing is then they have to be humble, tolerant, and try to work out that it's there. They have to figure out a medium of communication to how to bring it up. What is the forum? Because at the moment, it's not the right moment. When the sock hits the floor, that's not the moment to say it. It's at another time when things are better. So you have to figure out, okay, so that's the fourth thing. How can I be made aware of my faults, or what would make the other person happy? Under what circumstances and in which way will I accept? And I have to be real. If I say that this is it, when that's done, I have to respond. You know, and if there's any detail about that, as much as needs to be given, should be given. You know? Okay, say whatever you like, but no bad words and no attitude. You know, or, you know, whatever's the reason. Or, you know, I don't like all this beating around the bush, just be straightforward. Or, you know, some people, it just depends. So whatever it is, and then it has to be that you have to say what you not what you think the other person would say. In other words, in this whole exercise, never say what you think the other person wants you to say. But always keep in consideration how that other person will respond. You know? And so use proper words and that to explain it. Straightforward doesn't mean being uncultured. That's an American misnomer. It's called, in Sanskrit, it's called aparaha. Like that. But somehow or another, we put it into one of these euphemisms, you know, like ethnic cleansing. You know, it means genocide. But we say ethnic cleansing, it sounds nice. So if we say, oh, I'm straightforward. Boy, that was pretty rough what you said. Yeah, you know, I'm straightforward. Well, why don't you just accept that you're speaking like an uncultured person? Why don't you? All you have to do is change the word. Instead of saying that's stupid, just say that wasn't very informed. So that means you don't have the culture, or the tolerance, or the patience to behave properly, and you're throwing it on the other person. So that's not responsible. That's not being straightforward. That's just being, you know, blunt. Dogs, when you walk by, they bark. So the dog is, hey, they're, we should make them believe it. They say what they mean. They don't pull any punches. You know? They don't like you, they bark. They bite you. They snarl. They like you, they wag your tail. Hey. Man's best friend. Is that okay? Yeah. You can try it. I'm just saying it's an exercise. You can try it. So it's not saying you. I'm just saying it's a generic statement. It can be tried by whoever it applies to anywhere in the creation. Yes. Oh, okay, yeah, that's a very good point. Very good point. Very good point.
Sometimes I expect something someone should do. Any person knows what they might be talking to this.
socks stink. The sari doesn't. The sari is going to put on the floor because it will soon be picked up. The sock won't be picked up. There is a difference. Yeah. Now he's making the point that the quality draws another quality. If you're pleasant, you'll draw pleasantness. This is something, someone mentioned this to me the other day, is the idea was there is it's too far down the line. We know each other, we're too familiar, it'll never work. But the point is, since that's what we're looking for, it will always work. Good relationship is what we're looking for at every moment. So it'll always work. It's not that you know the person too much or they won't respond, because that's the reason people are in married life, is for pleasant interaction. That's why they're there. One may say, well, that's artificial. But if you look at it, but the whole thing's artificial. You know, being in the material world, doing this, restricting yourself, all these things, it's all artificial. There's nothing unartificial about it. So the point is people will pay serious money to go see a serious performance of anything, music, drama, dance, you know, and you're going to tell me that that's what the people do in their normal life? They walk down the street playing their guitar or everything that they do. No, they're only doing that on the stage because you're going to pay them money. But you're paying money because they do it so well. And it invokes feelings and emotions and this and that. So that's the point. Properly spoken, properly done activity, even though it may seem quote-unquote artificial to the uncultured, you know, what do you call it, independent, you know, how you say it. But that's what the other person's looking for anyway. You know? It's like that. The wife's been told how much she's appreciated a million times. So the man thinks it's been done. But the wife expects it to be done again. Because hearing that the other person appreciates you, depends upon you, has a need for that interaction, that itself gives a taste. And that taste is nice. They want to taste that again and again. So I say it's already been told, because it's not that, it's the taste of being told. It's not, you understand? It's all the things around it. That's also, that's the science of the male-female. The man is just right to the point. The female is everything around the point. The point isn't actually, the point is something that gets you from here to there. And what you taste in between, that's what's important. Because when you get there, there'll always be another goal. As you see, is the feminine thing is not steady. It's whatever is here. As soon as you get there, another thing comes, another thing. So I'm going to say they're unsteady. Yes, in dealing with what goal and this and that, that's unsteady. But in tasting what's in between, that's always steady. Well, the man, what's the taste in between, that's not important. So it may be good, may be bad. He's gotten the thing, that's for him is what's important. So that's his consistency. He can go to work, he hates the job, he hates, you know, commuting, he hates everything, but he gets the money, he can maintain his family, it's okay. So the experience is bad, but the result is good, fine. But if the experience is bad, it doesn't matter how good the result is, unless it's so short-term, the woman will never buy it. The experience also has to be good. So even though it may be 10 times more difficult to do it in a particular way, to get the same result and get the nice experience, that's what's expected. You know, so it's different. So that's the science. So, therefore, that's the point, is the seeming artificialness. I've seen this many times. You're dealing with doors and you're telling me you just have to behave properly. But that's artificial. It says, then do one thing. Go up to your husband and tell him, yes, I am a witch. I like being a witch. I always was a witch. And I'm sorry that for the 6 months before we got married, I behaved not like a witch. I was artificial then. But now in my maturity, I've decided to give up this artificialness and be the real me. Just go up to him and say that. That would be real. And to not say it, that would be artificial. So my point is, if you were artificial before the marriage, then you better be ready to be artificial for the next 30 years. Because the reason they married you was for that artificialness. That's what they thought they were buying into. Both parties are like that. The man is super sensitive, the wife is very considerate and very grateful. It works very nicely. It's fabulous. And the reason it gives up, you'll basically find insensitivity and familiarity is what destroys any relationship. You just take the other person for granted and you don't consider their feeling. I'm getting this experience now, I'm not sensitive that the other person is in a different headspace. I'm all spunky and all that, and the other person is very disturbed about something. He wants to discuss something very seriously. So I'm all spunky and he starts to say something serious and I just turn it into a goof and laugh and joke on. He becomes very disappointed and he walks out, goes over, this is a friend. Hey, what happened? I wanted to talk. Well, yeah, so let's talk. I was talking. No, but we were talking, we were joking. No, you were joking, I was talking. No, what do you mean? You know, the other way around. You know, same thing with her. He's in the mood, she's feeling it. It's just got to be. It's whatever's there, switch to that. And if you do that, it will immediately come back to what was yours. Because everybody wants to be happy. But they're not happy, so they want to get from where they are to where you are. So you have to make that bridge. You don't make the bridge, it's a fight. You come to their, that's easy. And if both parties are doing that, if one party does it, it'll work. If one party is tolerant and humble and respectful and doesn't expect respect and is like this, it'll make it work. It'll be rough, but then it'll come back up and like that, and it'll go down and come back up, go down and come back up. If both parties are doing it, then very quickly it'll match. Because one is trying to adjust and the other is trying to adjust. This is not mental. You know, you don't get all mental about it. It's just a matter of, what's happening? Like this, that. And then very short, as soon as you get rid of their unhappiness, they want to be happy like you're happy. Does that make sense? So that's where the... means you're going to have to follow the rules. Means God made the rules. Our relationship is with God. We're supposed to be following His rules, pleasing Him. We're supposed to be restricting our, you know, crazy ideas for bringing in line with Him. If we bring our ideas in line with Him, we're happy. If we don't bring them in line with Him, we're not happy. That is the fundamental principle. Everything in the cosmos works on that. So, you didn't learn that as a brahmachari. Like that. So then, you're going to learn that in the house. It's the same thing. There's no difference. You know, the temple commander, the this, the that, the harassing, oh, I want to be independent, I want to be this, you know. That's the biggest joke in the world, is that I'll be independent by getting married. Right? Now I only do what the temple commander says. You know, but you get married, you're only going to do what your wife says. Temple commander is only attached to see that you do that service. Wife is attached to you do that service plus everything else. So it's less independent, but whatever. There's a feeling of independence. That's the illusion. So in there, you're going to have to follow the rules that God gave of how man and woman interact. You're going to have to do that from a detached position, not take your own purposes that are prominent, but you have to take the other person's. You have to be humble, you have to be submissive, you have to be tolerant, you have to be respectful. Every quality that you have to go back to Godhead, you have to take the same qualities and apply that to make a marriage work, a friendship work, a management work, anything work. You want to educate yourself, you know, you want to study, it's the same principle. You can't be out playing and study your books. You have to be studying your books. You can't be off here and there. You have to be focused. You can't be disrespectful to the knowledge. You have to be respectful of it, otherwise you won't value it. You have to be tolerant. There's passages that are very difficult, very tough. You have to go through it. It doesn't matter what it is, the devotional qualities. That's why Krishna says there's only one path. Because there is. There's only the path of bhakti. But people take the path of bhakti and use it for karma, jnana, or yoga. That's all. The karmis, all these books the karmis write about, you know, self-help, all they are is actually a misunderstanding of the devotional path. They observe the devotional path and come up with some conclusion. But the same principles are saying there, being straightforward, being honest, revealing your mind, or, you know, or controlling yourself, or controlling it, you know, whatever. They'll take one angle or the other. It's all it is you look, you have to have that quality in devotional service anyway. So there's no better self-help program than becoming a devotee. And therefore, only by following the devotional program and the Vedic literatures can you make anything work, including marriage. So therefore, devotional service is the most practical gift that we've ever been given. It'll make anything work. It's just a matter of understanding how to connect it. You know? Because generally we always take the opposite. We take, okay, the arranged marriage doesn't work, I'll arrange it myself. So independence is our solution. But it's not. It's dependency is our solution. Dependency on good friends, on Krishna, on the scriptures, on our own intelligence, our, you know, because you say, I'm depending on myself, but 9 out of 10, you're not using your own intelligence. You see it coming, oh, there's something wrong there. I shouldn't get involved, but you won't because of attachment. So you didn't even depend upon yourself. So then, like that, it's, does that make any sense? Yeah. So it's worthwhile. It's, if what's seen like that, it's not a separate endeavor than devotional service. It's more indirect. It's neutral activities that aren't against devotional service. But by performing them with detachment, you'll get liberated. You won't get bhakti, but you'll get liberated. So that's not a bad thing to get, because it gets you out of the material world. But along with that, you have to be cultivating your sadhana and devotional activity. Otherwise, you won't get out of the material world. And the only reason that we in Kali Yuga are taking up the path of detachment is because of bhakti. We're not detached by nature. So we would never do it on our own. So it's only because of sadhana and devotional service that we can perform prescribed duties with detachment. So unless we're cultivating that also, we won't even do this. So we drop all the sadhana and that. We see that the other things also drop. So we have to keep it up, keep it together. Because our only qualification is that. You know, we've been saved by Prabhupada. He's given us this devotional process. That's our only qualification, nothing else. Oh, not I was so intelligent, or I went to IIT, or I was a great philosopher, and I was always, I had read Bhagavad Gita before becoming a devotee, I was a seeker, or none of that. None of that will get you anywhere. It's because of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And that mercy comes in the form of chanting Hare Krishna in devotional service. So we see that, so even there, making the endeavor to make the marriage work better, to work it out, we see it in connection with Krishna. Because I'm going to have to figure out who I am. It's going to be a process of self-realization. One is, okay, self-realization meaning self, meaning body, mind, intelligence, ego. Yes, maybe not the soul. That we figured out before. But I don't know who I am. Otherwise, why am I in this mess? If I knew who I was, I wouldn't be in this mess. I don't know who I am. Because if I know who I am, there is no mess. Like that. That means, this annoys me. But if I'm self-realized, nothing annoys me. You know? So therefore, I don't know who I am. And so the process, it will give a lot. It'll deepen one's own understanding. It will help the other person understand. Then you have that camaraderie to help each other go back to Godhead. Because that's the meaning of that. And especially that's Vanaprastha. Vanaprastha, the whole emphasis is how you can help each other become Krishna conscious. It should be there in Grihastha life, but many times it becomes diffused into so many, you know, little details of day-to-day life. But that should be the basis of it, you know. But now it can be more direct. Is that okay? Anything else? Yeah? Srila Prabhupada ki sarvita bhakti.